Hey, gang.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the smorgasbord of free speech, because you'll hear a whole bunch of different news and views on RBN. And keep RBN going, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. Also download the CoSertified app. It's totally awesome. And it's only like $3.99. And you want to do that. Lead a non-CoSertified lifestyle. Okay, today we have with us Mark Dankoff. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's great to be on with you. And there's been a lot of stuff that's happened since the last time we chatted. And obviously this Russian-Ukrainian conflict has been the chief item of interest worldwide. And the implications of that conflict obviously are still unfolding. And we're just kind of jointly waiting to see exactly where this thing is going to take us.
Right. And I think the last time we talked was probably... You came on this show, but I think maybe the last time was when you were on Stormfront, the very end of February. Was that it?
That sounds about right.
I think it was right after this it all started. I remember it was a cold day in February, and I think it was the last or the next last Stormfront that we did before we've gone on hiatus.
Yes.
So we've got, that's about 4 weeks, you know, and maybe the military operation that we're getting closer to 5 weeks. There's an awful lot of stuff going on, an awful lot of misinformation, and you could turn on Lester Holt or CNN or whatever, and you know the Russian army is being humiliated, and the government's about to fall, and everything like that. What's really happening?
Well, of course, I'm reliant upon some pretty good people to inform me as to what is happening. Since I'm not actually on the ground over there, I have a variety of people that I've been consulting. Sonia Van Der Ende, of course, is over there right now. I'm finding the Duran to be an excellent source of news. And
And Alexander, and help me with his last name. It's like Mercurius. Mercurius, okay, thank you.
And Alex Christoforou. On the Duran, and I watched their most recent show, other than the one that just came out today. They put one together yesterday with Glenn Deason that was really quite comprehensive in outlook, well worth people's time. And I understand that the Duran has one out there today. I haven't watched yet, dealing with this whole issue of who's going to blink first in regard to Russian gas and Russian insistence that they're going to take payments only in rubles. That's something, of course, that will be of interest to the various Europeans that are watching that with bated breath, both in Germany and elsewhere. But I've generally found, in terms of what's actually happening militarily, that staying abreast of what Mercurius and Christoforou are telling us, and people like Glenn Deason and Scott Ritter, is very much worthwhile. And then, of course, I subscribe to a series of things on Telegram that are representative of what the other side is saying, up to and including the Russian Ministry of Defense with their particular angle on what their actual strategy is and what they claim is the outlook for achieving what it is that they have insisted all along they were trying to achieve, which is a completely different analysis that coincides with what the Duran is telling us than what you were going to get certainly from CNN and all those folks. So this is where we are. And certainly when you start talking about who is most likely giving us the correct information for very obvious reasons, and I think this would be true of most of us who listen to RBN, we're going to pay a lot more attention to people like Mercurius and Christoforou and Scott Ritter and the like than we're going to pay to people that have been proven wrong, absolutely dreadfully wrong,
again. Well, when you had that whole Iraq war thing, Scott Ritter was going around saying that, he had been over as a weapons inspector and they didn't have the weapons of mass destruction. But lo and behold, they had all these weapons. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Never mind.
I'm making a joke.
Yeah,
usually you laugh at my jokes.
Yes. Ho, ho, ho. Yeah.
Okay.
So it is. Yes. So it is. It is exactly what it is. And certainly in terms of track record, we know basically who's largely proving to be right in this. And then we can add some other very, very fine people as well. Philip Giraldi and Ron Paul and Pat Buchanan and David Stockman are other people that have been telling us the real story all along on what was leading up to this conflict, and very definitely from time to time in terms of the way it seems to be playing out, are in the main giving us much better information than obviously what CNN is going to tell us, or the New York Times, or the San Antonio Express News, which is basically rerunning whatever it is that the New York Times and Reuters and the Associated Press are telling us. So these are the sources, and I think it's important for our people, which is why every time I'm on here with you, Patrick, I attempt to list a number of sources, a number of stories from different outlets to give our folks an opportunity not simply to listen to what we're saying, but to go back and read some of these stories at their leisure to see whose narrative is a lot closer to the truth, if not the truth, and whose narrative is absolutely off base. And again, it's absolutely amazing to me when we look at the pack of lies that the American public has been exposed to since 9/11, both in terms of the attack itself, as well as Bush's war on terror, and all the things that have happened in more recent times. You know, certainly, I think we know who's giving us the scoop and who isn't.
Right.
And clearly, when you get into my analysis of this, which coincides with Stockman and Buchanan and some of these other folks, I think this all boils down to the false promises made to Russia at the Cold War's end, that where Gorbachev was told certain things by Bush one and James Baker about what NATO was not going to do if Gorbachev agreed to the reunification of Germany, as the Cold War was reaching a point where it was clear the Soviet Union was in the process of dissolving. Those broken promises, the constant NATO recruitments of ex-Soviet republics, the constant move of NATO to the east and to the north, and even into the southern underbelly of Russia, that's all been a part of this.
Right.
Certainly, and the outlandish bombing of Serbia.
Before you move to Serbia, I just got two real quick comments about the NATO expansion. You know, you mentioned there were promises made by James Baker and the first Bush administration. And one comment is that, you know, lots of people who were involved in it have said, yes, indeed, the promises were made, one of whom is Jack Matlock, who was the American ambassador to the Soviet Union at the time.
Yes.
He was involved in this. The other point I want to make is, even if there weren't guarantees made, the continual absorption of all of these former Warsaw Pact and Soviet republics into NATO is provocative, even if there weren't promises made. That is a provocation. And the bombing of Serbia, or it was still considered Yugoslavia at the time, still formerly Yugoslavia. Tell us about that, because that's something a lot of people may not remember, but that also has huge implications for this in on a lot of levels.
Yes, and two places in terms of our news listings for today's conversation that our listeners will be able to read after the fact on this very subject of the 1999 Bill Clinton and NATO bombing in what would became known as the Kosovo War. Nebojša Malić has something on this at RT, a very comprehensive conversation about that. Bousman's Russia Insider reran something in recent days. It goes back to 2015 on this in terms of NATO atrocities in Yugoslavia. This was a major turning point in the situation that led to what has happened just since the 24th of February. And in terms of the outlandish character of America's conduct in this thing, both with Russia and in these overall conversations about NATO and Ukraine, we are all more than conversant with these photos of Ambassador John Sullivan running the LGBTQ flag up the official flagpole at the American Embassy in Moscow. The other thing that has happened more recently is that the American Embassy in Moscow at night on their electronic billboard, the evidence on this has been sent to me, complete with the videos. The American Embassy in Moscow, either just before or after this, after the 24th of February, was running the cover story of Time magazine from 1999 on NATO's bombing of Serbia and of Belgrade. So this this is the sort of thing that is designed to achieve nothing but antagonism. It is designed to achieve nothing but the very sort of circumstance that we're now seeing, which is an overt shooting war, which is the recruitment of mercenaries, NATO weaponry pouring into Kiev to support an illegitimate regime. And this is where the coup d'etat, the illegitimate Victoria Nuland, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Barack Obama coup d'etat of February 2014.
Yeah, and let's throw John Kerry in there, because by that time he had replaced Hillary Clinton.
That's right. John Kerry is in. As a matter of fact, this is not simply a question of what we now know about Hunter Biden's subsequent dealings in Ukraine, being made a board member of Burisma, courtesy of dear old dad, Joe Biden pressuring a prosecutor in Ukraine to drop the investigation of his son and the Burisma situation, or face certain difficulties with ongoing Western support in regard to loans to Ukraine and so forth. But John Kerry himself, as I understand it, his son and Mitt Romney's son, I believe, and I believe a son of Nancy Pelosi, have also been involved in these sweetheart deals in Ukraine since that coup d'etat.
Yeah, these no-show jobs. You get on the board, you get you know, your six or even seven figure payoff for the year. No-show job. Pretty sweet work when you can get it. One quick question about sources. And if you don't know this person, I'll find it by the end. Right now I'm driving, but I'll find it by the end of the show. There is somebody who is originally from Chile. He speaks with a complete American accent. He went to Dartmouth. He's living in Kharkov, and still he's in Ukraine. And he's gone by a couple of names on his various internet outlets. So it's some sort of Spanish name, and he just released, Dr. Duke sent it to me, he just released about a hour and a half long video all on Victoria Nuland's role in this. I don't know if you know off the top of your head. If you don't, I'll get this information out by the end of the show.
Yeah, well, I'm not aware of that, but I'd very much like to see it. We might even add it to our show links, because that's the sort of thing that enables people to see. There's some of that already out there on YouTube, but this sounds to be more comprehensive than anything I've watched thus far in regard to her activities. And of course, we are all aware, or most of us would be aware, of her taped conversations with Jeffrey Pyatt, who was as I remember this, was the American ambassador to Ukraine at the time.
We've been talking about on this show ever since this show started. I mean, we've been talking about this forever.
And this is all prima facie evidence of exactly what was going on, how much money was poured into this in order to facilitate the illegal coup d'etat, how much money has poured into that country since then, especially in the wake of the actual launching of this conflict, where in terms of weaponry, in terms of mercenaries, in terms of direct American governmental subsidies being poured into Ukraine to support the current illegitimate president of that country, who is not, incidentally, folks, and this is very factual, Zelensky is a Jewish drag queen comedian, folks. That's all. This is not at this point hyperbole. This is who this guy is, and this is to have a joker like this as the alleged president of an Orthodox country. Kind of tells you the tale of the tape.
It sounds like you don't think Zelensky's a hero.
Definitely not a hero. And in this particular case, in terms of my understanding of this entire narrative, we're not simply dealing with his most dubious credentials as the latest U.S. EU installed quote unquote president of Ukraine in Kiev. But of course, as a part of what is not being disclosed in Western media is the extent, of course, to which the Ukrainians reneged on the Minsk agreements that would have prevented this conflict from taking place. Certainly, the war being conducted by Zelensky's regime and perhaps that of his predecessor in the Donbass is thought to have taken the lives of about 14,000 Russian ethnics, as I understand it. There was also the prohibition on the use of the Russian language in Ukraine. If you want to throw in a few other things, and this is where James Jotras becomes a particular expert to consult. Jotras is an Orthodox Christian, is a former American State Department type, and his expose several years ago in Chronicles magazine on the way in which the American CIA and the National Endowment for Democracy were conveniently paying a lot of money to this Eastern Patriarch Bartholomew II, operating about from Constantinople or Istanbul, take your pick, is the name you want to use for the city in question. But this guy began to intervene where he has absolutely no ecclesiastical jurisdiction to create a division in the Orthodox Church in Ukraine, which historically, of course, was being overseen by the Russian patriarch Kirill.
So is it like a division between like straights and gays? I mean, I don't mean to be so blunt.
Well, that's about what it is, because Bartholomew II, if I'm remembering this correctly, it's believed that he and his operation in Istanbul slash Constantinople got about $25 million in exchange for his service of intervening in an area that was not under his ecclesiastical jurisdiction. But you're absolutely correct in terms of this pro-queer agenda on the part of the West in Kiev and in Ukraine. Bartholomew II was even insinuating that maybe the Orthodox Church should alter or at least in some ways soften its historic position on LGBTQ, that kind of thing, especially the way in which the Russian Orthodox Church was adhering to the historic Orthodox position on moral subjects like this. So this is how far this stuff goes.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, you had mentioned the American ambassador, Sullivan, John Sullivan,
in
Moscow,
yes,
running the rainbow flag up there, ramming it up their pole. And then a few years ago, Marie Yovanovitch, who was the American ambassador to Ukraine following Grigory Piatt, she was his successor.
Yes.
You know, she famously marched in their gay pride parade. I mean, so there's really like official pushing of this stuff. I want to ask for a clarification on something, and then also your comment on something. So you mentioned the Minsk Accords, and
yes,
the Minsk Accords were agreed to by both Russia and Ukraine. The mediators, well, it took place in Minsk, so it was hosted by Lukashenko, the president of Belarus. But the mediators were François Hollande, the French president at the time, and Angela Merkel, the German chancellor at the time. And these were agreed to in 2015. And I know that it included autonomy for the two Donbass provinces, restoration of Russian language as a co-official language. Did it also include neutrality? Was that part of the accord?
I believe so. In terms of the independent character of the LNR and the DNR.
Was Ukraine, would Ukraine have to pledge not to join NATO? Was that part of the accord? I can't remember.
You know, I can't remember on that.
Make the world go away. And get off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say. And make the world go away.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it. And how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get. And you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And make the world go away.
I can't remember.
You know, I can't remember on that point or not, but I think on these other points there was agreement. And for me, the most damning aspect of it all was that Zelensky actually made this statement at some juncture in recent weeks. I don't know if he made this statement before or after the invasion of February 24th, but I know that Zelensky indicated that it was never his intention to abide by this so-called Minsk agreement, but simply to agree to it as a temporary tactical position while he arranged for other things to happen, so to speak. So okay. this is where
Zelensky
we are.
Or Poroshenko?
May have been Poroshenko.
Yeah, Poroshenko.
Now that I think I stand corrected, it was Poroshenko.
So, right. Okay, so anyway, what I wanted to ask you, so you had that accord, and maybe by the end of the show I'll be able to clarify whether the neutrality thing was a clause to it. I kind of have the feeling it wasn't. But you had that accord that was agreed to, and it only imposed like neutrality on Ukraine. I can't quite remember about that. It was agreed to, and Ukraine never abided by it, and they continued to shell and attack the Donbass.
Exactly. They were continuing military and paramilitary operations after that Minsk accord was agreed to.
And then compare that to the so-called Rambouillet Accord that was never agreed to. That was supposed to be between the NATO countries and Serbia in 1999.
Yes.
I was it NATO countries or some of the NATO countries, America. I know Madeleine Albright was involved in it. And what it had in the Appendix B was something a lot more than neutrality. It was NATO forces would be allowed access to anywhere in Serbia, and they could go and they could inspect military facilities. They would have complete freedom of movement. So in effect, you had the occupation of Serbia. It was like a complete surrender, and it's something that no country could agree to, and so they did not agree to it. And so on the basis of having never agreed to a document in the first place, that was the whole justification for the bombing
exactly
of Serbia. And yet here you had Ukraine, which did agree. They did sign this agreement, never kept up their bargain, and they went and attacked and attacked and attacked these Russians, ethnic Russians in the Donbass. And after 8 years, now supposedly when Putin waits 8 years to finally respond after, you know, all sorts of other provocations, now that is an unprovoked and indefensible attack.
Exactly. I mean, and I think this gets back to watching Cristoforo and Mercuris and Glenn Deason dissecting this on this show put together by the Duran on YouTube yesterday. Watching that in their rehearsal of this long laundry list of bad faith situations that included what happened in this bombing of Serbia in 1999, and then of course the more recent bad faith negotiations that involved the Minsk Accord, and then subsequently Poroshenko's indication that he never really intended to abide by any of this, and but the Minsk Accord having been supposedly agreed to while the illegitimate government in Kiev, installed by Nuland and company, proceeded with its military attacks on the Donbass aimed at ethnic Russians that ended up over 8 years accumulating about 14,000 casualties. None of this is mentioned in Western media, not to mention, of course, what we now know about, well, two things. Just before the invasion, Zelensky made the statement that it would be a terrific idea to have nuclear weaponry in Ukraine, presumably aimed at Russia and at Moscow, but that was in and of itself certainly was a turning point. In if there was any doubt about a Russian invasion, I think that sealed it.
And then with everything, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
That would have been the straw that broke the camel's back. And then, of course, it's unclear to me as to when the Russians and Russian intelligence became aware of the existence of these American bio laboratories that clearly are weaponized in character, that have cropped up throughout Ukraine, but especially in the eastern part of Ukraine, apparently. And with what we now know about who has been involved in that, it was most revealing, of course, that this was all originally being treated by the Western media as a part of a quote-unquote Russian conspiracy. And yet when the evidence became absolutely overwhelming that Metabiota was involved in this, Southern Research Institute, Black & Veatch, those were some of the key companies operating in Ukraine that were putting all of this together for the so-called Defense Threat Reduction Agency of the Pentagon. When you start examining all of this as we currently know it, there are at least 15 of these bio labs. We've got some degree of data that's been accumulating on about 10 of them. And when you're looking at this sort of thing, with not just the long-term history of this totally duplicitous situation since the what looked to be a reasonable agreement and arrangement between Bush 1 and Baker on the one hand and Gorbachev on the other.
You're feeling lonely. Anytime you're feeling blue.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You say you want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to you.
Since the what looked to be a reasonable agreement and arrangement between Bush 1 and Baker on the one hand and Gorbachev on the other, between all the false and broken promises on NATO in regard to expansion and recruitment, then when you add to that clearly the bombing of Serbia in 1999, in this ludicrous Rambouillet agreement that Serbia could not possibly agree to and did not agree to prior to the onset of those hostilities. And then, of course, then the coup d'etat in Kiev in February of 2014 everything that's happened there since, including the 14,000 deaths in the Donbass inflicted by the Kiev regime. And then finally, with Zelensky's statements about how great it would be to have nuclear weaponry in Ukraine, that all of that forced the Russian invasion, the Russian hand in this thing. And then, of course, what's come out on these bio labs since is clearly absolutely unbelievable. And as you really look through this, gets back to something that I was telling Sputnik International for publication. They asked me to respond to the fact that the New York Post expose on Hunter Biden's laptop, when they were asking me why that subsequently was being discussed in greater detail by the British Daily Mail, I termed that a so-called limited hangout in terms of what was that Western media was trying to achieve. Well, the evidence on Biden's the both Bidens, the evidence on Hunter Biden's laptop, the evidence on the suppression of that story by mainstream media in the United States and by social media outlets like Facebook and Twitter before the 2020 elections. Had that story been properly aired, Trump would have for sure won the election without any subsequent dispute as to who won. But now, of course, the limited hangout is also attempting to contain the damages to everything else that has transpired, including what we now know of the comprehensive character of these American biolabs and the identity of the the specific American companies that were putting this together for the Defense Threat Reduction Agency and the Pentagon, as well as the locations of these biolabs, where if people in the West care to look at where these are located with the names and the cities and the provinces, it all begins to support a narrative completely different from everything that Western media continues to report on the fact that Putin and Russia are the quote-unquote aggressor in this situation, when frankly everything points, as I think Buchanan and Stockman and Ron Paul would certainly agree, among others, everything points in the completely opposite direction in terms of who the real aggressor is, how this all got started, and what a mess it is now.
Right. And I think it's pretty clear that this is really from the Jew crew in the State Department, to put it bluntly. So my question is, you know, we have all this obviously weird information coming out about Miss Ukraine taking out multiple tanks with a slingshot or whatever it is. Just this the fanciful, these stories. To what extent do you think, from your view of this situation, to what extent are the Russian military plans on schedule, going as planned, and what do you think the prospects are for this getting wrapped up and for what comes next?
Well, here I am borrowing from several excellent sources whom I am convinced are giving us the correct analysis on this. Scott Ritter is one. What Mercurius and Cristoforo and the Russian government itself have told us all along is basically proceeding along quite nicely for Russia. And that is that their strategy all along was to isolate and to secure the Donbass. I know that Mercurius and Cristoforo were underscoring, as was Glenn Deason on this latest show, that all along the Russian government had indicated, in the Putin statements of the 5th of March reiterated once again, that the whole issue for the Russians was the securing of the Donbass, both in terms of securing the safety of the Russian ethnics, and specifically the two provinces that Russia subsequently has recognized as being independent republics in the wake of all the false promises and broken promises of the other side, but also the Russians, of course, with what they're doing in Mariupol, are finishing up an operation that basically will create a nice land bridge to Crimea. It will also further solidify the status of the Russian naval base Sevastopol in Crimea. And so much of the Russian objectives, both of the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea, are dependent upon this Mariupol operation that I think is proceeding according to plan. And I also believe that Ritter is correct. And I believe that what the Duran has been saying all along is correct. And that is, to the extent that the Russians have been involved in activities in the western part of Ukraine, it has had a twofold purpose. One is to continue aerially taking out as many places as they can take out that involve mercenary training, that involve logistical resupply of their operation in the Donbass, where the bulk of their best people militarily are located. And to the extent that the Russians have had some degree of involvement outside of Kiev, to the extent that they have had some presence in what is the name of this town? Chernihiv, I believe, It has been primarily designed to keep Ukraine from being able to commit any of those people in their armed forces to the Donbass, at the same time that as far as Russian aerial operations that are destroying tanks, that are destroying artillery pieces, that are destroying air depots, that are destroying logistical supply centers, that are destroying training operations for mercenaries like the one west of Kiev that the Russians pretty much blew out on an aerial strike some days ago. Mm-hmm. This is now reached a stage where the Russian redeployment in their forces near Kiev, and I believe near Chernigov, is going according to plan in getting those forces into the Donbass to finish up the operation there. And then at that juncture, the Russians are going to have a choice. And this is where I think Mercurius was speaking very much to the point in this latest show in the Duran with Glenn Deason and, of course, with Cristoforo. Mercurius was making a convincing case for the fact that Russia has never desired to take all of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. The desire to militarily engage in the Donbass was forced upon it by everything mm-hmm. that has happened. And the Russians, certainly in terms of Kiev as a whole, they would prefer not to occupy the rest of it militarily or to deal mm-hmm. with the economic basket case that it's become. Now, right. they will be prepared to do that if the West and if Zelensky will not agree to a final demarcation between the Donbass region in the western part of the country. If the Russians have to take the rest of it, they will. And at that particular point, you will then see the kind of aerial assaults in the kind of ultimate storming of cities in western Ukraine that is not their desire. They would be quite happy to avoid all of that and just to get this settled in terms of what their original objectives were in the Donbass.
Okay, I've got a question. So getting back to the Minsk Accords,
yes.
Part of the Minsk Accords was, you know, if these conditions were met, that the Donbass gets a certain amount of autonomy, it gets a Russian language back, that it would be reincorporated into Ukraine. And of course, these two provinces, Lugansk and Donetsk, which make up what we call the Donbass, they have declared independence 8 years ago, and Russia did not recognize it. So obviously, you know, Russia wasn't seeking a annexation or a land grab. And, you know, my assumption, I think it's correct, it was that reincorporating them into Ukraine, it helps provide a, you know, a voter base to maintain Ukraine as a neutral and hence buffer state. That if all of the Russian areas are annexed to Russia, fine, but then the rump Ukraine is going to be, you know, embittered and much more difficult to maintain as a buffer state. Then you still wind up with NATO on your slightly enlarged borders. I mean, that was, I think that describes the past 8 years. But of course, in February last month, Russia did recognize the independence of these two breakaway regions, but it hasn't annexed them. And so my question is, do you see, or do these other people see, I mean, obviously, Crimea was annexed 8 years ago. It's never going back. What are these two republics going to be annexed? Is there a possibility of more territorial annexation? And then what happens with the rump Ukraine?
Well, you're asking all the right questions. I think the chances for some sort of an annexation with Russia in the case of the LNR and the DNR, that's very much a live possibility. One thing that I saw today, which suggests that even more of this might be afoot, is that in South Ossetia, I don't remember whether it was the foreign minister of that country or the head of state there, but in South Ossetia, there was a talk that they were quite interested in being annexed by Russia, especially in the wake of what was essentially a Western aggression against them via Georgia that, of course, was being fanned in flames by John McCain, among others at the time. The Russians took care of that militarily then, but South Ossetia is making noises like they would very much be interested in actually becoming a part of Russia again. Your question about what happens to these independent republics now, that's an excellent question in terms of whether or not they follow Crimea in terms of incorporation into Russia proper, and whether they do or they don't. I think it's an open question as to what's going to happen in Western Ukraine. Is there going to be a government there that will at least say that bygones are bygones in terms of not wanting any further destruction of Ukraine? Or is Zelensky and the forces behind Zelensky, are they going to attempt to continue hardballing all of this? Because I think Christoforou, Alex Mercurius, was saying that, the diplomatic position of the government in Kiev, contrary to propaganda that we're seeing every day in Western media, their situation is worsening. The longer this goes on, the harder the Russian diplomatic position is going to become. And if there is too much more monkey business out of Kiev after the Donbass is secured by Russia, then at that particular juncture, it's quite clear from what Mercurius did explain that Russia will then actively consider whether or not they're going to be forced to subdue the rest of that country and to occupy it possibly in perpetuity. That's not something they necessarily want to do, but it's something they might feel forced to do if this whole thing is not resolved diplomatically after they secure the Donbass, including a lifting of these economic sanctions including a better day in terms of some reasonable degree of diplomacy coming out of the United States and the EU. So the final disposition, all of this is yet to be determined, and it could get really, really ugly from here once the Russians finish off Donbass, which I'm confident they will, and once they feel that they have effectively achieved that fundamental objective. Then the question of the relationship of the LNR and the DNR to Russia proper is going to have to be dealt with. And the whole question of what the Russians may or may not be forced to do with the rest of Ukraine, including Kiev, that's an open question. I'm sure they would prefer not to be involved in these incredible aerial assaults on these Western Ukrainian cities, followed by an all-out charging of these cities with infantry and with armored utillery units. I'm sure they would prefer not to get involved in that if they don't have to.
Okay, and in our remaining minutes, first of all, the gentleman I was thinking of is named Gonzalo Lira, or at least that's the name of his YouTube channel, Gonzalo Lira, and he has a very excellent video on Victoria Nuland and her role in all of this, which he emphasizes. I've been emphasizing it, so great minds think alike. And then also, from what I was able to glean, I don't think the Minsk Accords had any statements on Ukrainian neutrality or NATO membership. So I don't think that was even part of it. But what I want to ask you in the remaining, say, 4 or 5 minutes is, we've been talking about the immediate implications especially for Ukraine. But really, I mean, the whole world this has been like a con job, basically, to get the entire world to do economic warfare on Russia in the hopes of overthrowing Vladimir Putin and turning Russia into Ukraine, more or less, into just a corrupt cesspool that is governed by Jewish oligarchs backed by the United States, which I don't think is going to happen. But there's a lot of things are going to change. You've got alternative financial systems that are coming into existence. Russia's demanding trade in rubles and all sorts of things. China is so far backing Russia. So is India. So are like basically all the countries outside of America and its the allies that it has treaties with. So for the world, what do you think is the prospect in the medium term?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see this whole situation play out because Press Television Iran, of course, has a story today about Iran and Russia working together and bypassing sanctions. The foreign minister of Iran and Lavrov of Russia are very much depicted photographically and otherwise in that story. I also believe that fundamentally, it's not simply going to be a question of the worsening diplomatic position, negotiating position for Zelensky, the longer this goes on in Ukraine proper. But the other thing that is a gross miscalculation on the part of the Europeans, and the Mercurius certainly was getting into this on the Duran last night, the gross miscalculation of the Europeans in regard to the way in which these sanctions are going to boomerang on them. And ultimately, the way that these sanctions, the longer they go, this is not going to be a one-way street. This is going to impact the American economy. It already has. We're going to see, predictably, the same gas and food price escalations that are beginning to hit Europe. And the other telltale sign for me, in press television, Iran has acknowledged it in all places.
Well, in 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British...
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the Internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Fast set of hounds, couldn't catch them. Down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
And the other telltale sign for me, in press television, Iran has acknowledged it of all places in terms of running some of the latest poll numbers on Joe Biden and the Democratic Party, is that we are looking potentially at a political blowback in the off-year elections in the United States that, for better or worse, will cause the Democrats to take a pretty good bath in the elections in both houses of Congress, with presumably a prelude to a real bad outcome for them in the presidential election in 2024. But when it seems to me that the assumption on the part of the United States and the EU that Russia doesn't have any cards to play in regard to these Western sanctions is utterly absurd. I think Paul Craig Roberts is entirely correct. They have all kinds of cards to play. And if they start withholding what they have in terms of the natural minerals and resources that the Western economies are dependent upon, if they really stick to their game plan and insisting on payment in rubles only, if the Russian diplomatic arrangements and trade arrangements that are being made with the Iranians and with the Chinese and so forth continue unfolding, then the West is going to have a very difficult time with their own domestic political constituencies as the economic costs to Americans and Europeans continue escalating. And frankly, as it becomes apparent to more of the world that the world has changed since 1945 and that the United States and NATO and Western Europe are not the relevant political and economic force, the premier one in the world that they once were. And we could be seeing what I think Pepe Escobar is arguing is the case, and that is the development of a Eurasian economy that begins looking eastward, and the United States becoming increasingly marginalized, even as Biden continues escalating his rhetoric, not simply with Russia, but with China.
And of course, you know, he kind of spilled the beans. The idea is to regime change Russia. Hey, and just like one last real quick question. What do you think the odds are of the United States over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years having an economic and or political collapse of roughly a magnitude similar to what the Soviet Union experienced in the early 90s?
I think that's absolutely excellent. It's not simply a question of $32 trillion national debt and counting. It's not simply a question of the number of cards that Russia and China and Iran, among others, have to play in combating these Zio sanctions. But let's face it, we all know, don't we, in terms of domestic political analysis, that the United States is not the same society that it was after World War II. We are a very divided people racially. We are a very divided people politically. We have open borders and all these illegals coming into this country. We've got Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ and all the rest of it to contend with, and a level of political distrust on the part of Americans of their basic political institutions, a distrust and a mistrust that is deepening at the same time that this must assuredly mean that over time, the backlash against mainstream media in this country will worsen as the economic situation for average Americans worsens, and as the domestic conflicts and the domestic tensions in a completely different America demographically and politically continue to be more evident. And this is very obvious, by the way, to the Russians, to the Iranians, the Chinese. They know what's going on here, even if Joe Biden hasn't figured it out yet.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
Patrick, enjoyed it. And send me that video on Newland from your source down in, I believe, South America, and we'll get it on the
Well, he's in Ukraine, but he's from Chile, Gonzalo Lira, and I will send that to you.
Send it to me, and I'll get it on our listings.
Okay,
thank
and
you,
I'll
Patrick.
Be back again. Thank you, Mark. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.